now and 72 degrees.
7:40 at AM 930 WEOL. I'm Bruce Van Dyke.
I'm Craig Adams.
And we are at the Arabica, Park Avenue in Amherst. It is day three of our spotlight on Amherst. Or as Bull in the afternoon liked to call it yesterday, he said Spotlight Amherst. I thought that had...
Oh, really?
Right. It took a little of that prep. You know, the spotlight on it. It was Spotlight Amherst. It was very succinct.
That.
It was like...
We should change it. We've done this for like 6 or 7 years now. We should change it up a little.
Right. This is our fifth time we've been to Amherst talking to people and getting an idea of what's happening in the community. We'll find out from Kathy Dean Dielman from the Historical Society a little bit later. And we'll have a visit from the folks from Mercy joining us, too. But right now, this portion is brought to you by Vandemark Jewelers in Elyria on East Broad Street near the hospital. Vandemark, a trusted name in jewelry. Jim Vandemark is here. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. What's going on, Bruce?
Oh, not a whole lot. Thanks for coming out and joining us this morning.
Glad to do. Beautiful morning in downtown Amherst, isn't it?
Right. Now, what did you get for breakfast over there?
My wife did the French toast. She decided to ride along with this morning with the convertible top down. It was a beautiful drive. And I did an egg and cheese, bacon, egg and cheese on an English muffin. And the bacon, egg and cheese is just going off both sides English muffins. It's a huge sandwich. And, boy, it's really a nice place. Plus, I've got to find a way to sneak that big couch-looking thing
Isn't
home
that
back
right?
there.
Right.
Yes.
Well, if you look under this table we have here, we have some sort of very sort of an ornate table, right? It's a wooden table.
Yeah. A homemade wooden table in here?
Careful with the knees, though. Craig, you and I at one point during the show will go, ow! And that's the point at which we've readjusted and banged our knees.
Take
on
you out just a little
the
bit.
The lower,
huh?
yeah. But I'm kind of wedged in here perfectly and ready to talk a little bit about... jewelry during the summertime. What do people come shopping and looking for things in the summertime?
You would think sometimes that wouldn't be true because jewelry would be a Valentine's Day holiday and a Christmas holiday. But you know, I have to say that it is normally fairly trafficy during the summer. Obviously, there's still watch batteries and jewelry repairs and things like that. And having our own in-house repair shop helps immensely because people just love the fact that when they drop their jewelry off to us, it stays on premise. And my son Bob takes care of it and back and does a super job. But I've got a fella coming in for engagement ring this morning. And so engagement seems to go all summer long. And weddings. So we've got a lot of weddings in July, August, September, October. And they're picking out their wedding bands and getting everything ordered up and some custom things. And so it does stay fairly busy. We're very fortunate for that, because some of your mom and pop jewelers just really rely on their December holiday to make their year. And we've been fortunate enough, knock on this nice table of wood, to have 12 months of business that supports us.
Well, special occasions happen all year round. And for
they do. So
family
obviously, you just said then if you get married in August, then the following year it's going to be your first wedding anniversary and the second year and so on and so
not
on.
Not that you're keeping track of those people.
No, know. I do. I do kind of try to keep an idea of when the anniversaries are. And so that helps, again, and not that you buy jewelry for every anniversary, but jewelry is a lasting gift that kind of is a sentimental thing. And so that normally the fellas like to celebrate the bigger anniversaries with a piece of jewelry because they know that their wife's going to have it and keep it and it's going to mean something, and they pass it down to their family, 5, 10, 15 year anniversary gifts, and 20 and 25 and 30 year anniversary gifts. And someday the daughters and the daughter-in-laws will get it and remember, oh my gosh, mom got that for her 25th wedding anniversary. Oh, that was so special. And that's the neat part about jewelry, is it's the sentimental value it evokes.
Well, if you could just remember to tell the guy, hey, your anniversary's coming up, you know those things, or the special one, you'll become a friend for life for them.
Yeah, well, too. In some guys, the guys like that. That's why we used to engrave the wedding date on the inside of the wedding band, so all he had to do was pull it off and say, yes, that's when I was married.
That's why. How many years
was that? Was the whole reason, Craig, right. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it was a reminder. I mean, we need calendars. And,
right.
Yes.
Do people still do a lot of engraving inside the jewelry with special things?
It's probably not quite as prevalent as it was because of all the alternative metal men's wedding bands that there are nowadays. Cobalt, tungsten. Remember we talked about those new meteorite ones and all kinds of different bands that are out there today. Some engrave and some don't, so it depends a little bit on what's going on. But we still do it, and on some of the ladies' sets we'll still engrave. And normally it was initials to initials, although I think Craig had his engraved I Love You Pookie Bear or something like that,
right,
on the inside.
It wasn't quite that, but...
But it was.
Yeah. Jim, when women come in, what are they looking for? Are they looking for something for themselves, or what might they buy for the man in their life?
if they're coming in for, say, a wedding anniversary or something, it's not just the wedding band type thing. Women shop mostly for guys anymore for watches. The men's jewelry market has changed a little bit. And so if you remember back, and I won't, well, maybe I will classify all of us as about the same age, but we in our generation, our fathers, they wore star sapphire rings and emerald rings and black onyx rings and Masonic rings and this, and wore a lot of gold jewelry. They wore gold bracelets and chains. And you remember Mr. T and the generation that he started, of everybody had a gold chain, a rope chain with a something on it. Mr. T had 10,000 gold rope chains around his neck, but in general they all did. And then the gold sell-off of the early mid-2000s has kind of softened that. Gold's very expensive. Now we're watching the guys come back with a huge vengeance for watches. And we thought the watch industry was dead because of cell phones, but now it's a piece of jewelry for the guy. So I've got guys that have 5 watches and 10 watches and 20 watches. We just bought an estate of men's watches a couple months ago, 75 the fella had. And he just loved to collect different watches, and each one meant something different to him. It was like, oh, I've got this silver-faced one with the black band for this. I've got the blue-faced one for this, and it was fun. So that tends to be, and I just sold my first engagement watch a couple years ago. The guy bought her an engagement ring and him an engagement watch, and that was his memory of his engagement, was buying a watch.
Now, so, do you get to teach them how to read the watch? Because half of them don't remember how to do a face watch.
Yeah, that's true. They're looking for digital.
That's right. And what are these slash marks and Roman numerals? You get to teach all that sort of thing, or do they have, you know, what is the technology that's been put into these watches? I'm sure it's been added into
it.
It has been, and watches.
So the biggest thing out right now is those satellite wave watches that are receiving a time signal from a GPS satellite, actually, so that you can get off the plane in Japan, pull out the crown, reset it, and it actually gets the time signal from the GPS satellite. So that's probably the newest technology. And then, of course, because the watches are getting so big, if you've seen them, they're the size of a house. Even the ladies' watches, then they have a lot of subdials and chronograph subdials for timing and things like that. And they've actually moved that traditional calendar, which was in the 3 o'clock position, a lot of times to the subdials at 3, 6, and 9.
Do you still have to wind a watch with a little thing there on the side?
That's a good question, Greg, and no, you don't. 90% of your watches, or 95%, let's say, are quartz in some sense. So they're battery operated, although Citizen is probably the leader in what they call EcoDrive, which is solar driven now. So the watch is self-perpetuating as far as its energy source. It receives energy every day from you wearing it around, just from regular light sources, indoor or outdoor, and it stores that energy, and it's good for 6 months on a full charge of energy. So the only thing you use that teeny little crown for now is to set the time every 6 months for time change. And other than that, and then there's still a whole lot of battery watches out there, which we change the batteries in and out on whenever we get ready to do them. So, but yeah, everything pretty much. Now there's a small, like anything, a stoic guys that use and girls that use flip phones still. And there's still a stoic group that uses wind up watches because they just love them. It's kind of nostalgic for them.
Craig, by the way, the current time in Tokyo, Japan is 8:48 p.m.
8:48 p.m. Yes, they are very close to just on the opposite side of the world of us, and so they're almost 100% opposite.
Do you have pocket watches? Are we going ever in that back to that direction?
Well, that does take you back, and pocket watches have really slowed, meaning that the kids today just don't see it or don't get it. Most of your manufacturers that you think of, Seiko, Citizen, Bulova, Tag even, none of them make any pocket watches anymore because it's just kind of a lost art. So then your old pocket watches, your collectibles, your Walthams, your Elgins, your Hamptons, and things like that, there's a certain group out there of collectors that still love old pocket watches. But unfortunately, I think that is a dying collection.
Not that you need any more things to stick in your pocket. You got this phone, the keys, everything like that as well.
But, yeah, more nostalgic than anything.
If you got a vest, you got it in the little vest pocket.
Looked pretty impressive,
didn't
it?
Yeah, well, you got good. And spectacles. Okay. Look like Teddy Roosevelt.
I thought you were going to add the chain. You need the watch.
Oh, yeah, you have to have the chain.
Yeah, if he had his chain and his watch and his spectacles, he could sit on the Davenport.
Now, Jim, normally when Jim Vandermark from Vandermark Jewelers stops by on our spotlight, he has something in one of his pockets here as well.
And do you have an anniversary coming up, Bruce?
In October, I do.
Yeah, I should call Janice and
it's
see.
It's not quite a five-year type of. Whoa. All right.
Isn't that a pretty one? Oh, now why is Barb coming over here now?
I wish we had a little more sun like we had yesterday. All right, there's
a... That's got a... So that is a white gold piece with a little bit of rose gold running up the rail.
I see that.
And then that is one of the newer versions that has a halo top, which is the circle of diamonds around the center diamond.
Now, it looks like these diamonds are in pairs that go around, or is that just the way it's set?
They're in what? There?
Looks like there's pairs, or is it one individual diamond all the way around?
It's individual diamonds all the way around the halo.
I see that.
Yeah, and set in what they called shared prong.
What is this round cut?
Yes, round brilliant cut in the center, about 3/4 of a carat.
All right. And then you've got them kind of down. Mm-hmm. down
and then
the
you
side.
See the rose gold in the center rail?
I do see that, yes.
So that is actually a gold that's mixed with a little more copper that makes it a rose color, which is very popular with the girls right now.
Things go in and out of style. How do you keep up on where the trend is going to be? Or is that just people coming in and asking?
A little bit of both. So the industry feeds us with the trends from what they see at all the major coasts. Of course, we all know that trends move in the United States from California, New York in. And so the manufacturers will come in with latest styles, trade magazines, trade internet, and then your staff keeps up, and hopefully you do too. And so you do. You try to stay fresh and know. And we did. We did a whole, you know, gold change from yellow gold to white gold. Now we're almost running up to the end of the white gold train, and we see the girls are starting to talk yellow gold again. So this is almost my third run of the gold change, which can tell you how old I am now. It's funny to watch it go through. When I started in the industry at Brandaw's back in 1981, I was 15. Started selling some engagement rings when I was about 18, and I remember asking Mr. Haywood Sr., who was the big boss down there, why do I have 4 trays of white and 8 trays of yellow? Because we were coming out of the 60s and 70s, 2 decades of white, and we were heading towards yellow. Then it ran the entire 2 decades of the 80s and 90s as far as yellow gold, and when we opened our store, Vandemark's, early 2000, we almost instantly went into the white gold world, and now as we're hitting 2017, believe it or not, we're going to rotate back and should be yellow again, but you see they're starting to put segments of the rose in, so I'm not sure if it's just transitioning, using rose as a transition metal, or if it'll truly stay with rose, but we're guessing it'll somewhat go back to yellow gold.
Do girls look at what their friends are getting and want similar, or 100%, do they want to be different?
Mostly 100%. You know, we are a society of the same that everybody else has, and if you've got that and it looks good, give me that. Whether it's a beer or whether it's a, you know, whatever clothing or whatever it may be, we all follow haircuts, and you know how haircuts change instantly. And so they do. And we have some that want to be individual, but a lot of them love to follow. And they don't want what their moms had a lot of times. And that's where the color change, that's where the two decades, the one generation comes in. If mom had a marquee diamond, I don't want a marquee diamond. Ugh, I hate those. And so right now, marquees are very soft, but rounds are very strong and ovals are coming back. And so it certainly is based on popularity.
I am admiring the cut of this diamond. It is talking to me. It's moving. It's like it's alive. I don't understand how to explain that.
Yeah. But diamonds are, I mean, when you think about it, Bruce, that diamond was buried for billion years ago in molten lava inside the earth, if you would. It's 99% carbon. Earth crystallized the structure with its great pressure. It came through us through volcanic eruptions and was buried under 14.5 tons of iron ore that had to be moved and crushed to get that diamond. Then went to a master cutter, was cut to unlock that beauty and brilliance, that scintillation that you're seeing. And that's what has turned girls on for so long, the mesmerizing part of that diamond that just draws you in. And now, of course, for the most part, when you think about it, every young girl wants a diamond engagement ring that they can call their own, and it's their own little piece of history. And that's what's so cool about the diamond, the brilliance, and to think how much work we had to do to get it and how much risk there was in fracturing it, if you would, when they crushed that iron ore.
So how big was the piece that gave us this particular one here?
The diamond itself isn't that much bigger than that because, of course, you don't want to lose much rough. But the iron ore that it could have been originally crushed in was bigger than this table. And brought up out of the ground, put into crushers, if you would. And then the diamond's harder than the iron ore. And then, interestingly enough, it's actually one of the final things is the iron ore and the diamonds are washed across a grease belt, coated, and water rushes across. and the diamond sticks to the grease belt, but the water rush or the iron ore falls off, and that's where we start to retain some of the diamond.
Sound like you've seen maybe some of this process.
We have, yeah. There's, I have not gone down and watched it in the diamond mine, although I'd love to someday, but the wife doesn't like to fly that much. But there's some great, again, videos out there years ago from South Africa. And Tom and Janice Haywood, when they had Brandaws, went to the diamond mines and saw the process themselves and then brought home some great videos of it and watched it. And I just sat there and just watched it timeless and time again because I found it so interesting. They actually use bursts of air, high-pressure air, then to shoot the diamonds off the grease belt, and then they remelt the grease. And so they have a whole bunch of methods. And the methods have improved so much that now they're going through those big, huge stockpiles in South Africa and re-going through them again, finding the diamonds that were left in there, because, of course, you knew they were. So then the old adage was that anything that ever goes in that mine never leaves again. Not that you could drive your car in there, but if you did, there's too many places to hide diamonds, so it's never leaving again. So equipment that goes in to work the mines never comes out, and everything's owned by the mine and the company. Wow. Pretty cool, huh?
Yes, but yeah. I heard half of what you said only because this diamond is I'm telling you.
Did you see he was zoning out, Craig, didn't you?
Well, that happens most days, but
it doesn't really. You have to carry the show, don't you?
This is great. I love this.
You're right about that, though. I noticed the same thing. There's just something about that one that's
there are so
different.
Many cuts on that diamond to reflect the light and even right. with the diamonds that are on there.
And diamond is a big mirror. And so basically what it does is it takes that light from in and refracts it back out the top in the spectral colors of the rainbow and gives that, again, that beauty and brilliance. So, and that's what, I mean, I figured out, one of my good friends said something about it and we were talking about, but the ladies just love the fact that the diamond ring is theirs. You know, the house belongs to them and the kids. The car belongs to them and the kids and you. Everything else in our lives belongs to everybody we share it with. But her diamond ring normally is hers personally, and it's almost like a little status symbol. Whether it's a big diamond or a small diamond, it's hers, it's personal. And that's the cool part about our business, is the sentimental value that evokes out of that.
Jim, you mentioned the diamond mines in South Africa. Can diamonds be harvested from other places too, or is that pretty
other
much
countries?
It? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, diamonds have been found on all seven continents, there's no doubt. And I don't even know that South Africa is the biggest producer. There are Canadian diamonds now. Certainly, if you watched Blood Diamond, there was the Angolia diamond mine conflict issue, which really was kind of overblown for the movie. But, yeah, we find diamonds everywhere. In the United States, you can actually find diamonds, although we're not a major producer. The question is, if you believe in the Big Bang Theory, where the diamonds ended up. And, of course, South Africa is one of the biggest original production mines of fellnames Oppenheimer and Rhodes. And then De Beers, as you hear, which doesn't do business necessarily in the United States, kind of basically bought up all the mines and then controls the flow of the diamond industry. Some call it good, some call it bad. In some senses in life, if they did control, so if a farmer controlled how much wheat they put to market every year and stockpiled and wheat lasted, you might do good of keeping stable prices in wheat. De Beers has done that with diamonds. They've kept stable prices and just small increases. And sure, there's stockpiles of them, but they've done a nice job of just continuing that over the last 50 or 75 years.
You never know what you're going to find in the ground, Craig.
Kind of cool. Keep looking down.
Now, of course, here in Amherst, sandstone.
Sandstone.
That's why it's sandstone center.
We just went by the quarries the other day.
And we'll be talking with Kathy Dean Dielman from the Historical Society a little bit about that. You look around, you see the buildings that were made from a lot of the sandstone, not only here, but other places around.
Think she's going to bring you a piece of sandstone?
I hope not.
I hope not. he won't be quite as mesmerized, Willie Craig.
Want one of those kind of grist mill kind of a things? You know,
well, you know, they carve those out now, those sandstone things. That'd be pretty cool.
Sure.
You put it in your front yard.
Right.
Is that Bruce lives here?
We thought about the anchor when we were in Vermilion, or you know, the people that have anchors in the yard, but it's like it's a one-time deal.
Do you go by Bruce Almighty at home?
So, who knows? I answer to anything. And usually it doesn't include my name, apparently. Usually if someone has a voice that's of a certain loudness, they're asking me to do something.
Hmm.
And they have to usually ask it twice because the first time I've sort of...
You just kind of zone it out, don't you?
Ignored it.
Yeah,
exactly.
I understand. Right, that's there. Okay. It's okay. We all have our lots.
Yes. Well, Jim, we appreciate you coming in.
Well, I appreciate being on.
And coming out and talking to us. It's always interesting to see what you've got in your... In the jewelry business, what's going on?
I'll have to do a live video feed next time.
You could think about that.
Sure.
Got to make sure we have the diamond camera, right?
He has your diamond cam with you.
Or all the lights that you, the special lights that they buy.
Like the jeweler's light.
You get
right?
the jeweler's light and the jeweler's loop, yeah.
And the magnifying glass, yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows what we'll see. We'll look at cut, clarity, and what's the other?
Cut, color, clarity, and carat weight.
Carat weight as well. Jim Vandermark from Vandermark Jewelers.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks for stopping in. Appreciate
it. Oh, glad to do. Appreciate you having me out.
And get back to your, now it's going to be a slightly.
I think Barbados.
We appreciate just breaking up from the meal that we have here at the Arabica. We've got more coming up as we spotlight Amherst here on WEOL.